on digital radio, digital TV, mobile and online. This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
The real world and the virtual world collide tonight on Game On. We're looking at the place where something you hold in your hands meets something you watch on the screen. With me to bridge the gap are the host of Family Gamer TV, Andy Robertson.
Hi, Adam.
And Quentin Smith, editor of the board game blog Shut Up and Sit Down and fellow survivor of FanFest 2011.
Hello, Adam.
Ahead of the opening of the Tokyo Game Show, Sony have announced some additions and revisions to the PlayStation family of machines. The handheld Vita gets lighter and thinner with more battery life, a gigabyte of onboard storage and a new 64GB storage card. It'll also come, if you're in Japan on the 10th of October, in a variety of colours, but no word on when we'll see it here yet. The addition to the family comes in the form of the Vita TV, a properly small and apparently very clever bit of kit. The Vita weighs in at 110 grams, but will be able to plug into the HDMI socket of a TV, stream PlayStation 4 games if the main TV is busy, access web movie services and play Vita and PSP games. There is no word on availability outside of Japan yet, but it looks like Sony have moved to stake a claim on territory previously marked out by the Ouya and the GameStick micro consoles. Now, Andy, I know you watch new technology and things like the 2DS, which we were talked about very briefly last week.
Mm-hmm.
Sony seem to be doing a lot of things all at once at the moment, don't they?
There's lots of announcements and lots of things to process. I mean, for me, the thing that stands out, more on a personal level really, is being able to play Vita games on a big screen. I love the Vita, I love the way it controls, but when I'm sat at home in my living room, being able to play that on my telly is a really nice option.
What about this business, though, with taking some of the territory away from the Ouya and the GameStick? I mean, have they woken up to the fact that small is beautiful? I mean, we know that the Japanese have always liked their consoles a bit on the smaller side, but this is positively tiny.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a similar territory, similar footprint sort of on the tabletop. But I think it won't be as tiny in terms of pricing of games. I think we'll still see the sort of traditional way that Sony and PlayStation games are priced, which is probably quite a bit higher than Ouya. I thought it was Ouya. games are priced.
I should be pleased to be corrected if somebody knew exactly which way around it went. Well, I mean, Quentin, they're obviously not going to go in at the 69p a game point that the Ouya has. So is that going to be a problem, or have they built enough into this, do you think, to get over that particular hump?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think the guest you had last week, Matt Lees, had an interesting point today saying that he was actually more excited about this than the PS4 or the Xbox One. I mean, the Vita has quite a nice catalogue of indies right now, and I've got to admit, I find myself playing handhelds these days more than the big consoles, so being able to do that on a large TV is probably a very clever move.
Yep, it sounds like it, doesn't it? That's the future, but here in the now, those of us lucky enough to have children, or juvenile gamers, as I prefer to think of them, thought we had it pegged when Skylanders came out, but oh, we were wrong. Disney also has designs on our wallets.
We just played Disney Infinity.
It has all my favorite characters.
Then the pirates playset.
Kind of navigate the waves and got the cannon. Then,
for the Incredibles, we had to save the city.
And that was like, bam, 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 bam.
And Monsters University.
But not to scare things.
And then I went into the toy box. Whatever your brain can think of, you can do it.
Buildings stacked on top of buildings. Stacked on top of buildings.
I used a cane from up on these Omnitroids.
I built a ramp.
Ring of fire.
Paintball gun.
Ground pound.
Well, that was embarrassing.
There was a Tron car.
Dodgeball shootout. Jetpack.
Hoverboard. Racetrack. Kraken. Dirt biking.
Toilet paper shooter.
Helicopter.
So that's how it all went down.
That was boss.
It was epic.
Mr. Incredible, Captain Jack Sparrow, and Sully are included in the starter pack. Other characters and content sold separately and necessary for some gameplay shown.
Jeff Bunker is the creative director on Disney Infinity, and he told Andy what the creative process had been like.
Well, it's been crazy. I've made video games for about 20 years now. All those years I've made virtual goods, something that just exists on the box. We're dealing with the most popular characters in the world, and to be able to work with the creators of those characters and come up with a style and a look for their characters that they're happy with and that we know the fans are going to love, it's been really fun.
So, Andy, when were you sitting down with Jeff Bunker?
That was back at E3, so in early June, I think it was.
And what did they have to show you at that point?
Pretty much the whole thing was there. They hadn't quite announced all of their play sets. So the way that Infinity works is it's quite modular, and they still had to uncover some more of that. And now we're at launch, we've got the full set. But, you know, we had a really good idea of what the game was, what they were offering, and how it compared to Skylanders.
That is the big thing, isn't it, of course? Skylanders is a game in one gaming universe with these little toys which are quite smart. They allow you to write back to them, so you can take your gamer profile with you wherever you go. You can take your PlayStation Skylanders onto somebody's Xbox and so on and so on and so forth. Infinity doesn't work quite like that, does it?
There are some sort of technical differences. It's in that same genre of having a physical toy that comes to life in speech marks in your game. But the way it functions and the way you upgrade those characters is quite different. So whereas in Skylanders, you made a permanent choice about how your character was evolving in a sort of a role play style. But in Disney Infinity, you have these power disc tokens that you place under the character, and it temporarily gives them a boost of a particular stat.
So what we've got is we've got play sets with the starter pack. I think you get three realms, don't you? You get the Monsters University, Captain Jack Sparrow, Pirates of the Caribbean, and, of course,
The Incredibles,
thank you.
Yep.
They're all there in the box, Mr. Incredible and Jack Sparrow and Sully. Three characters. Now, if you want a multiplayer, as I was playing with my daughter, you have to have another model. So you've got to spend there. If you want to get more power-up discs or game-changing discs, there's a spend there for blind bags. This is quite a cleverly put together piece of work, isn't it? And it looks like it may very well be one of the most efficient ways of running my wallet out of money that I've encountered in quite some time.
Yeah, I mean, the thing to remember is that by and large you can do pretty much what you need to do out of the box with the starter pack. I think the one addendum there is that you do need to buy, in this case, one extra figure if you're going to play co-op in one of the story modes. You can play co-op in the game creator toy box mode, where you can mix and mash up all the different bits and make your own games. But to play the story cooperatively, you need one extra figure. But once you've done that, I think you need to avoid falling for the sort of trick that actually you need to buy more figures. And there is a tension there in that. And in the game, like in Skylanders, it will pop up little videos that will advertise to the player, oh, here's another figure you could buy. Perhaps you should maybe go and ask your parents for it. So I think if parents don't realise that advertising is there, then I think that's where perhaps they might get a little bit disgruntled.
A little bit of the pester power will come in. Well, my personal pester machine is Isabella, and she's 8. So I asked her, since she and I have been playing it, what she thought of Infinity.
My name is Isabella, and I'm 8 years old.
How soon after you got the Infinity pack did you decide that you needed another character?
Yes, I needed a girl, because all of them were boys, so I just wanted a girl one. And I got Violet from Incredibles.
You've got 5 models. Mm. You've got Violet, that's new. And you've got Mike Wazowski now. So why did you decide you needed Mike Wazowski?
There is this mission that you have to do at Monsters University. And I thought if we had 2, it would be more easier and fair.
You get £1 a day for doing your chores,
yeah.
Don't you?
Not at the weekend.
Not at the weekend, so. One of those models costs more than 2 weeks' pocket money. Now, do you think that's good value?
Sort of.
Okay. And what about the fact that the kits, which open other areas, like the Lone Ranger kit, will cost you 6 weeks' money?
No, it was £24 or something like that.
When it comes time to buy or to ask to buy more characters, are you going to buy characters from a film that you know, or from a film that you don't know?
I would say what you don't know, because then it will be a surprise what their power is, wouldn't it? Because with Mike Wazowski, we didn't know what his power was going to be, because he isn't scary, is he? He's just a circle with another circle on him. Because I haven't seen all the Captain Jack Sparrow movies. I've only seen one. But I knew he was going to have a sword. He's always got to have a sword.
Well, that's Isabella, who's been learning very important lessons about the cost of modern consumerism, thanks to Disney. Now, Andy, you said when we were speaking that you don't really need to buy the extra models, but the environments are very cleverly worked through so that you can only unlock certain things with certain characters. So what? Are people going to be sharing characters, or are we going to see that?
In the starter pack, you get those 3 universes that we mentioned, and that is 3 stories. So I think you really need to have exhausted those story modes. and have had a good play in the toy box before you start thinking, what other figures and worlds do I want to add in? I think that equates to the sort of value that we're used to in a video game when we buy it. But obviously it's designed to be modular. It's designed to be a collectible line of toys as well as a video game. So there is that. They do look nice on your shelf and you do sort of maybe potentially get drawn into buying more. And the danger is, this is a big danger, you get drawn into buying the full set. Because as we're seeing in America, Toys R Us are announcing limited edition versions of both the figures and of the particular power discs. So to get those, if we were to get them in this country, you'd be paying over the odds.
Aha, you see, it all makes perfect sense. Those three realms, Monsters and Incredibles and Pirates of the Caribbean, I mean, how many hours of gameplay are we looking at there, do you think?
It depends how fast you play them. And my kids actually have gone very slowly through the Incredibles. But I think if you were to play through it to try and finish it, it's about 6 to 8 hours for each one. If you add those up and then you've got the toy box element as well, where potentially you could spend a long time.
We should explain what the toy box actually does. It's a kind of almost like a level editor area, isn't it, with... I think it's got the Disney fairy tale castle in there, but you can delete parts of that and rebuild it to your heart's content with the terrain blocks that you get, and you can populate it with the little animals and all these sorts of things. There's a lot of little tchotchkes all across the realms, aren't there, for you to go back to the toy box and sort of fiddle around with it. In that regard, it could have a lot of play life just as a toolbox almost, couldn't it?
Before I played it, before I tried it out on my kids, I was thinking, they're not going to do this, because something like Little Big Planet was just too complicated for them to go in and edit stuff. But here, actually, I did, with very little sort of prompting, they spent a happy quite a few hours just sort of messing around in it. They weren't actually creating games, but they were changing the environment, adding cars, beating each other up, and just having fun in the space.
That's quite encouraging, isn't it? That kind of open play, which you don't actually get that much of in many games. You don't get it in Skylanders, do you? All you have there is the adversarial modes.
It's certainly something that Disney are bringing to the table that currently Skylanders doesn't offer. And as well as that, there's the online multiplayer, which again goes beyond the two-player local co-op of Skylanders as well.
I've talked about it being on the PlayStation, at least in my house. I'm not sure what you're playing it on. There are Wii versions of this, aren't there? What's that like?
So there's the Wii U version, which is very similar to the PlayStation 360 and gets all the features and functions. And part of that is that they're releasing user-created content of these toy box worlds that people have created. You can then download them. That's currently on the Wii U, 360 and PS3. But the Wii version, which is, I guess, because of the horsepower of the console, doesn't offer as fully a fledged experience, doesn't seem to be able to take advantage of that sort of downloadable content in the same way. And there are various elements of the Wii game that are just not as fully featured as you had on the 360.
This is the other thing, we've got to talk about price. I noticed that when I went to one high street store, the models were coming in at about £14, and in one of the supermarkets they were going at about sort of £12.50 or thereabouts. This is one where it pays to shop around if you're going to be buying new models, doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't think they're price fixed. And then as well as that, you need to think, are you going to buy a single figure? Or they have these sort of collect three packs of villains or heroes, which go across the different franchises. As well as that, you have obviously packs that come with a whole new story and add not just the story element, but a new character to go with it. So there's lots of different ways to spend your money, as you alluded to earlier.
Mm-hmm. I think the first one of those packs that I've seen is the Lone Ranger one, isn't it? With the Tonto and the Lone Ranger in the box. Well, I'm not sure how that's going to play for my daughter, who's not very keen on Westerns, but I'm prepared to give it a go. Now then, sitting very quietly, it's been Quentin. Quentin is, as I said, the editor of the board game blog Shut Up and Sit Down. Now, Quentin, you deal with the real world in a kind of a way, don't you? You deal with...
Well, I deal with about as real as fantasies get, sure.
Yeah, well, what I mean is the real world in terms of there are actually things to move around a board. With or indeed a tabletop and cards and all sorts of bits and bobs that go with it. This is odd, though, isn't it, that video gamers and video game companies sort of coming back round on the idea that what we need is real things again.
I don't think it's odd at all. What we're moving towards is an entirely digital culture. Music used to be, say, like CDs, and now we're moving towards a download culture. Actually, vinyl record sales are spiking massively. Video games were downloading, and now people just want something to hold in their video game culture, too. I think it all makes total sense. It's something you can see in board games as well, because the sales of those have been going up by 10% every year for the last decade.
I always thought, Quentin, that board games were going to become a sort of a lacuna, a sort of curiosity, that people were going to think about them and say, oh, that was something we did in the past. But that's not the case, is it? This is something people are doing now in addition to the online stuff that they're doing.
It's true. The board game scene has actually never really been stronger or healthier. We've got amazing designers in Japan, Germany, America producing better board games than we've ever seen. They just excavated a 5,000-year-old board game a few weeks ago. It might be the case board games are just part of human culture.
Well, we do find that odd number-counting game in the burial chambers of the pharaohs, don't we?
The royal game of Ur, yes. I don't know if it's actually any good. I played an ancient Ugandan game once, and it was terrible. But no, the games I cover are, they are quite good.
What sort of stuff are you seeing? I know you were talking in your blog, one of your video blogs before, about a hospital management game, which on the surface sounded a bit dry, but when you were actually explaining it, came to life.
Quarantine is an interesting one. Quarantine was actually kickstarted, and kickstarted is something else that's given another breath of life to board gaming recently. Quarantine does a clever thing by having the patients that queue up outside your hospital as you cure them also act as your currency. It's an example of a board game doubling up on components. You know, the patients are also your money. And then just even something as simple as the color of the cubes is the sickness they've got. This is the kind of elegance we're seeing a lot of, you know. It's amazing how many uses you can get out of a dice, a sand timer, a card. It's limitless. It's bizarre kind of what people come up with to do with these very simple pieces.
Do you think that video game culture has informed board game culture as well at the same time?
I think game culture is a lot more fluid than that. I think it's kind of in vogue now for video game designers to talk about how they play board games, to talk about pen and paper prototyping. Jake Solomon, the lead designer on the new XCOM, which everybody loved, made a lot of rounds doing interviews about how him and Sid Meier, when the game wasn't quite working, went off for a weekend and just made board games. And when they had a board game that worked, then that's the thing that they put into XCOM. That's the game that everybody loves.
I see. Now, Andy, your children, are they fans of board games? Are they quite traditional with what they play there, or are you more experimental with what you let them loose on?
We do play some. I'd like to play more, actually, so we're quite fans of Carcassonne, and they've got kids' Carcassonne that they play as well for when they were younger, and we've played Settlers of Catan and some of those games, but every time we sit down and play it, we are always saying, why don't we do this more often? There seems to be some sort of mental barrier to getting that box out, putting it on the table. They gravitate more naturally towards the controller, which I think is a shame. And any game, lots of board games I've played of late, I've been really impressed with. And it seems like they have a maturity to them that video games are still only starting to get towards. They understand themselves much better, it seems.
The scene's just been going around for a lot longer. I think just the designers are older. The designers know what they're making. The community knows what it wants. That's not entirely positive, though. Since getting into board games, you know, full time, I've discovered actually there's a slight reticence to the community, almost what you'd expect. But as far as what you said about there being a barrier between people sitting down and playing board games, that might be a problem that's endemic only to the UK. What we're seeing is sales of board games are spiking in Germany, France, Japan, America, but not here. We're actually a strangely isolated pocket. It's interesting, and it might be something to do with British reticence. I don't know.
We don't like to sit there and argue with our family about a judgment call on a certain card or an interpretation of a rule.
Well, I think we're very afraid of not understanding the rules at all, of making a mistake. And also, British socialising is heavily based around alcohol. In Germany, believe it or not, it's been common for decades now to just bring a board game when you go to dinner rather than the traditional bottle of wine.
Well, that would be a rather marvellous thing, wouldn't it, Andy? The other one I like the idea of is taking a set of Carcassonne down to the pub.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like that would work, because it's so portable, isn't it?
Well, at this point, we might probably have to explain to some people what Carcassonne is, which is a simple game of building little cities and populating them and controlling roads, and I'm not making a very good fist of this. What's Carcassonne about, Quentin?
Carcassonne is a tile-laying game. What you're doing is you're starting with a blank table. Everybody gets a hand of tiles, like a hand of cards almost, and can lay these tiles out on the table. So you build a whole landscape, and then people start claiming parts of it. So perhaps you and me, Adam, are building a city together. We're trying to decide when's the good point to start claiming that city with our little people. So, yeah, you're watching a whole sort of countryside expand on your table. It's kind of beautiful.
I play it on the Android tablet on the train, if I'm honest, and I enjoy that most because it does the scoring for me, and that was always the bit that I got most confused by. So, yes, there's an attraction there. The two of you guys are both of you engaged in sort of not exactly different ends of ludic culture, if we can use that word, and I think I shall. You deal with the sort of, I say, 20s, 30-somethings there, Quentin, and Andy, you're dealing with children. But it's wrong to think about games in terms of the compartments that people fit into, isn't it, Andy?
Some of the favourite video games that I'll recommend to families are often not ones that people would expect to be for children. So actually, my kids have got on much better playing Wipeout HD on the PlayStation when they were first learning to do a driving game, much better than Mario Kart, because the way Wipeout was set up, you could do a tilt control and it would bump you back onto the track, whereas playing Mario Kart, you just get stuck going endlessly into the barrier. So I think often they're these sort of blind spots because we categorize games in particular ages, we forget actually that the landscape of gaming is much more complex than that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think something really interesting about board games is if you give something with a quite dense manual to an adult, they'll, you know, be repelled. But kids will attach themselves. I mean, I say this, you know, talking to two parents, I don't have any kids of my own, but I do remember as a kid wading through the most dense manuals, the most dense rules. I had time and I had a will to make sense of this stuff. Adults, I think, at some point sort of forget how to learn and enjoy learning almost.
My kids really enjoy in board games is that there's often gaps in the rules and they have to make decisions of how are we as a family going to play this particular game. Whereas in a video game, if they get frustrated about the way it works, they're stuck. So I think board games actually give them a greater sense of ownership. I think in that space, there's much more learning that's going on.
Once again, it sounds horribly positive there, Quentin. We can't. what can we do to bring this all down? I mean, are you seeing any things out there in the board games that you're playing that aren't actually very good because people are trying to be too complicated or too smart?
Too complicated or too smart? Well, you know, I don't mean to make it positive again, but the fact is every board game ships with the most powerful mod tools imaginable in gaming, which is just that you don't have to do anything. You know, if you don't like a rule, you don't have to play with it. A lot of my friends when playing war games will say we have to attack each other at the beginning or we shouldn't attack each other, just to try and get their friends into the right tone. I think if there's a problem with board gaming, it's that you do have to accept that maybe, just maybe, you'll get your friends over and the game won't click with a certain group, and that's not really the end of the world. But I think to a lot of people it's kind of abhorrent, the idea that you have friends over, you put a game down and maybe one of them doesn't like it. But after that's happened a couple of times, you understand that the rewards on offer are definitely worth the risks.
Okay, now that person who doesn't like the Illuminati, of course, can go and sit outside and read a book or do something else.
Well, the Illuminati is very, very, very long. It's very long, Adam.
Yes, it is. I've played games that lasted for days, but then that was when I was at school or college and I had days to spend on these sorts of games. I suppose, Andy, that's one of the sort of advantages of being small, isn't it? You can be playing with mum and dad and then eventually you can just say to mum and dad, well, you can't commit long enough, you're going to have to sit this one out.
Yeah, so my kids get way better at games like Infinity and Skylanders than me just because they play it longer. Well, that's what I say. I'm probably just rubbish at it. I mean, going back to the board games, I think one of the negatives for me is actually there's so many of them and it's such a sort of a blossoming space. It's actually hard to know where to start. So I've dipped my toe in and played Carcassonne and Settlers. Mm. But I'm sort of like, well, where next? I'd have to go to some quite relative, well, the websites I've seen about board games, I've probably not visited Quentin's, are really hardcore, full of text, lists, not like the sort of consumer site that I would go to for other products. And so what? Navigating my way through that has been a struggle.
Help him out, Quentin. Where should he be going next?
Well, if only there was some kind of website that could help you out. The truth is that I started Shut Up and Sit Down precisely because the board game scene can be tremendously opaque. Shut Up and Sit Down is just trying to be an accessible space where anyone can watch a video and go, oh, this game looks quite fun. Less about whether a game is good in the context of board gaming, but just here's why this game is entertaining and perhaps you should play it.
So where should he be going next? What should he be playing? What should Andy be playing?
If he visits shutupshow.com, he'll be able to see a large list. But are you looking for something to play with your family?
We've enjoyed Carcassonne, we've enjoyed Settlers of Catan, and so that stretches the kids, but we quite like that. So it's something that has that creative element to it that we can play all together.
How old are your kids?
5, 8, and 10.
Well, there's a board game called Escape the Curse of the Temple, which is a family game from Germany I've been loving recently. All this is everybody starts in the middle of the board, and it's played in real time, and everybody has to run around laying tiles, mapping out this large temple, and you're going to be rolling dice to do this, and you roll these dice as fast as you possibly can, and to move into each new tile, you have to roll certain results. But then different people can become locked, can become trapped, and so the family end up yelling for, you know, relatives to come over to pull them out of a pit, all this stuff. And it's great to dispel any myths people might have about board gaming, because people think board games take a long time. This takes 10 minutes. People think board games result in hurt feelings. No, in this one you're working together, and it's so inventive.
It sounds like there's a real-time element to that, so the faster you can roll, the better you'll do. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. The faster you can roll.
Love that.
it's so much fun, and just a lot of screaming and shouting, and there's all kinds of lovely ideas, like curses that mean if you roll one of your dice off the table, it's gone forever.
Nice.
It's all lovely. The other game that does real-time stuff in a very inventive way is something called Space Alert, which is pretty much what you graduate to after playing Escape when you become an adult, because it's a tremendously complex kind of Soviet Star Trek where everybody has to run a ship in real time with a CD that is the ship's computer and shouts at you. So it's about as nerdy as it gets, but it's so much fun.
On digital radio, digital TV, mobile and online, this is BBC Radio 5 Live.
And the news comes from